Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Then told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
It is John Pollock and Brandon Thurston coming at you for a second time this week. Some wonderful bonus content, and we cleared the deck because a returning guest here to Pollock and Thurston. A very big week for the WWE, announcing its five-year pact with ESPN, a deal worth $1.6 billion. And here to break it down with us, he is your sports and media reporter over at CNBC. Also puts out the weekly CNBC Sport newsletter, a must for everyone's inbox out there. Alex Sherman is on the show with us. Alex, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, let's, first of all, now that we've had a couple of days to look at this from many different angles, you know, for the WWE, this has been largely viewed as a tremendous deal for WWE. From the ESPN side, what do you see as what they saw as the value here in going after this WWE product, and for the price of which it is commanding, a big step up from the Peacock deal?
The very first question that I asked ESPN chairman Jimmy Pitaro when the deal was announced was, would you have done this deal if not for the soon-to-be existence of your direct-to-consumer service, which is this sort of all-everything ESPN has to offer, $29.99 per month service that ESPN will be launching on August 21st. He said yes, but I think that it's sort of a qualified yes at yes. I really think that the special sauce of this deal for ESPN has to do with this new streaming service for two reasons. One, ESPN is really in the business of adding as much varied content as it can to keep people paying for the service every month. Because what is the difference between the streaming world and the cable world? The biggest difference is the ease of churn, the ease of cancellation. You can just click on the button and you stop paying for ESPN per month. In the old cable world, if you wanted to stop paying for ESPN, you'd have to stop paying for everything. So that is the biggest difference between streaming and cable. And so how do you keep people paying every month? Well, you make the audience as wide as possible. So bringing in WWE content makes that ESPN audience wider, for sure. And also, you give them a reason to subscribe every month. And what better way of doing that than paying for a premium live event package that's staggered through the year, where it's sort of the most efficient way of having everyone stick around each month. In fact, if any media company could ideally devise their streaming service, what they would want would be one premium live event per month. That is the most efficient way of being a sports streaming company in the new world. Everything else is excess. You just need people to keep paying per month. And if you can do it by one event, then that is the most efficient way you can do it as a media company, where everything else is fluff. Because even if they don't watch the other 30 days out of the month, you're getting all of their money. So I just think that the fit between the WWE PLE and what ESPN is going for with their direct-to-consumer service, it happened to be sort of a, you know, right place, right time deal.
And one of the big questions a lot of customers have who already have ESPN is whether or not they're going to have to pay the $30 per month to get access to the PLEs, or if it's something that's just going to come free with their existing package. And my understanding is that it depends on which carrier you have. And you've written similar in your newsletter, right?
Yeah, with a caveat. these PLEs don't kick in until 2026. Mm-hmm. So ESPN hopes to get most of the pay TV deals done by 2026, I'm told. As of day one, when the service launches on August 21st, there's only going to be about 50% or so of the pay TV operators that have this authentication capability. But, you know, I don't know exactly if ESPN will get to 100% by 2026, but I do think there will at least be some major ones. Yeah,
the big ones on the table are Comcast and YouTube TV, right?
Comcast and YouTube TV would be the two biggest ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And those, do you have any idea when those renewals are due? Are they due before the end of the year?
I believe YouTube's pretty soon. So, you know, you never know. Sometimes these renewals get derailed by a number of different reasons. So just because the YouTube renewal is up doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be done on time. Sometimes these things can be extended. Sometimes you even see at the extreme where there's carriage disputes and blackouts. Yeah. But assuming
which it was with YouTube last time. Yeah.
Right. I would imagine YouTube will be fairly soon. I don't know the details on the Comcast 51, but it's such a major provider that, you know, I would think that there would be some major unhappiness among many customers if this deal was not done in time for the WWE PLEs to kick in 2026, but we'll see.
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting test of the wrestling fan that I think is now getting caught up to what all sports fans are going through now. And that is, you know, to be a WWE consumer, it is going to require ESPN. It's going to require Netflix. And if you want to follow SmackDown like a cable subscription, and this is sort of where like all of sports is going, where you slice and dice these packages, and it's how far can we spread the fan that feels these different tiered products are all must have for my streaming package.
Yeah, this is why everyone thinks that at some point we're headed to streaming cable bundle, right? Like where you bundle all of these things for a discount and it kind of looks like cable, and that's where we end up. And at least you give consumers the optionality of buying them on an a la carte basis, which never existed in cable. Now, how close are we to that streaming bundle? Probably not that close, because it's very difficult to do. From an economic standpoint, Netflix feels like it's the most valuable streamer. Why should I bundle with these other ones? They're going to ride off my coattails. Therefore, I should get more of the economics if I'm going to do this, or I don't need to do it at all. We're still very much in that phase. But, you know, you can certainly logically estimate that 5 to 10 years from now, we'll have something that more resembles a cable bundle, but just among the streaming services.
Do you feel we learn anything about how the ongoing UFC negotiations are going, which, of course, UFC has its rights currently with ESPN? On the earnings call on Wednesday, TKO's president, Mark Shapiro, was asked if, you know, he was asked about it being surprising that the WPLE deal was done before the UFC renewal was done. He kind of responded saying that the question triggered him a little and that the answer is unequivocally no. So, do you believe him? Do you think there's any complications at this point with the UFC renewal?
I mean, the complications is money. That's what the complication all tends to be with these renewal deals. The UFC wants more money than media companies are willing to pay. I've heard that ESPN still wants to do some form of a UFC deal. I think, you know, that with these media rights deals that involve live events like UFC does, there's an element of complication there, and WWE kind of falls into this bucket as well, because there has been Netflix, I think, kind of drove this, but it has now been accepted by other streaming services, that there's an increased value on the live events for what I just said, mm-hmm. which is that you really only need one live event per month, and you can get everybody paying for your service. So all that other stuff becomes a little bit more fluffy than it used to be. So what has happened is the content producers, so the sports leagues, are thinking, are there ways that I can slice and dice my live events versus my routine programming and maximize the amount of revenue by ferreting out these different things to as many different partners as I can? That adds a level of complexity to these media rights negotiations that didn't used to exist. So you could blame Netflix if you want, because they were really the adopters of this philosophy. But I think they showed that it worked a little bit with some major success, like the Paul Tyson boxing match, which was enormous from a rating standpoint. that now these deals are taking a little bit longer because the leagues themselves are trying to think about, if I add a layer of complexity to them, can I actually maximize my revenue?
On the other side, Alex, do you see this as this deal that WWE has struck providing any kind of like juice for the UFC negotiations, that you have this comp now that, hey, a WWE event is now, the market says, a $27 million property, and for the UFC can argue, I mean, do you see that playing any kind of a factor, or are these apples and oranges among different fan bases among TKO people?
Yeah, I think there are apples and oranges to some degree. I'm not really sure that one comp leads to the other, maybe marginally, but from my understanding, usually the each negotiation is kind of its own thing. So I'm not sure, especially like if ESPN pays up for this, I don't know that like UFC is going to be able to strong arm ESPN to be like, well, you just paid this much for this, so why don't you pay more for this? Like, ESPN will pay what ESPN feels like it should pay, and probably no more. Like, ESPN has a lot of leverage in these negotiations still.
Would it be fair to assume that you would see ESPN as looking at this as something that we're paying all this for the WWE audience, and the Venn diagram is not that overlapping with the UFC audience?
I'm sure they have some very specific data, as does TKO, on exactly what that overlap is. And that, to your point, that's what will drive the negotiations of how much ESPN is willing to pay.
Do you have a sense or a prediction for who ends up picking it up? It seems it seems pretty hard to imagine that ESPN would keep some of it, but that it seems more possible that this will go across different partners.
That's what I think will happen. I think it'll be a number of different partners. ESPN will get a slice of it, and then it will just be a matter of who are the other partners that pay up enough to get a piece of it. Yeah.
It's not front and center, but among wrestling fans, I mean, they're looking at this, I think, at the first instance is this $30 price tag, and it is going to be for a lot less content. The library is not part of this deal. Your NXT events are not part of this deal. I think in the grand scheme of things, that's probably what you would file under, like, the fluff aspect. Like, where is there, like, when it comes to, like, content libraries, is that really what these streamers are looking for, or is it more the big events that are largely driving things? And these are, like, it's nice if you're a hardcore fan that you get all of this stuff, but that's not really going to be your drivers.
I mean, look, there, you can take this from a different strategy depending on who you are. So, like, if you can't get the live events, then the library is nice because, again, that may keep some proportion of fans paying and not churning off. But yeah, I think the premium live events are certainly the most valuable of all of the programming you can get here. And then it kind of dwindles off down from there. And you'd have to ask a sports media executive what they value more in terms of library versus sort of day-to-day live programming and how they make that value. That's a good question. I'm not really sure how they would answer that, but I am pretty sure that they would say that the premium live events are the most valuable.
Yeah, if I could ask you one media question before we let you go, one thing that I think deserves some notice since Nick Khan's been in charge of WWE is just how they've engaged deeply with the media, especially the media attention from outlets like CNBC or like Bloomberg that they really want. And like, I don't know if you have experience in this in the prior management, whether it's George Berrios, Michelle Wilson, how has that changed with how they've engaged with the media then? I'm thinking like 2020 and prior versus now since Nick Khan has been in charge.
I can't really speak to the prior because I wasn't covering it then. I can certainly speak to the present. Yeah, there's no question that there's a heavy emphasis from Nick and also above Nick, like the TKO ownership, in appealing toward toward investors, for publicly traded investors, for sure. Because this is part of a whole thesis. It's part of an operation. It's not just a WWE story. It's a sports and entertainment story, which continues to grow, both at TKO and sort of, Endeavor, which was sort of the other part of this universe where the ownership is run by Mark Shapiro and Ari Emanuel. And that includes like the William Morris Agency and other things. That piece just got taken private, actually, by Silver Lake, but it's all kind of part of the same story here, which is how do we monetize live events in a new media world? And I think that's a story that needs to be told to investors because A, it's complicated, and B, it's new. So I think that's why there has been an attraction toward speaking maybe more freely with Bloomberg or CNBC.
Do you have a sense of like why? So Ari Emanuel is the CEO of TKO. Mark Shapiro is the COO and president. And Mark Shapiro is pretty clearly the front face of the company. And why not the CEO, Ari Emanuel?
Ari has a lot of different things to do. He's still an agent, actually, to the most high-profile clients. And I think at this stage in his life, he wants to do what he wants to do. So Mark is more perhaps the... Mark is the chief operating officer. So I think he's very much kind of in the weeds on the day-to-day details from an operational standpoint. So I think that's kind of why it makes sense for him to be the person that's often sort of on these calls. Not to say that Ari never is. He will still speak publicly, but definitely.
It seems pre-recorded on the earnings call. Yeah.
I think he shows up on CNBC from time to time. He's also like the agent to some of the people that are on that are talent on CNBC, I believe. That may play a factor as well. But yeah, I think it's just a matter of like, you know, where Ari is in his career and what he wants to do.
My last question is, we're just, August 21st is the launch date of the direct-to-consumer service from ESPN. What are you sensing as sort of the general sports fans' appetite? And it feels like from ESPN, they're very much treating this like a soft launch. Jimmy Pitaro is already using the metaphor. It's a sprint. It's not a marathon. And, you know, you go over the carriage issues here. It's probably a bit of a silver lining for WWE that this is, you know, months and months away before they are there. It might be a very different service come April.
The biggest sort of soft launch aspect of it is what we talked about prior, which is that if you're a cable subscriber, you can just authenticate and get this for free. And you know, again, for wrestling fans, the hope is that that will be the case for almost all the major providers by the time 2026 comes around. You know, if that's the case, then you wonder how many people are really going to subscribe to this new ESPN direct-to-consumer service. Because if you're a cable customer, maybe you don't have incentive to cancel cable and sign up. And if you're kind of pushing that world aside, then you're only dealing with the non-cable subscribers who have opted out because they don't want to pay $100 a month. Then how many of those people really want to pay $30 a month for ESPN, even if it comes with Hulu and Disney Plus for free? We'll find out. That's the big question. So there's certainly a world where this is a big deal, and it really accelerates the transition, the true sort of death of linear pay TV. Finally you can get ESPN outside of the cable bundle, and that will be like the final major straw to break. And we'll start to see, again, sort of this rebundling of streaming services. And you can point to this moment as the true death of pay TV. There's another world where it doesn't really happen and pay TV plateaus at a certain level, whatever it may be, 45 million U.S. households or whatever the number may be. And if that's the case, then, you know, this streaming service will help a certain amount of people, but the number won't actually be that big. And it'll just kind of bob along as this nice little way for ESPN to add incremental revenue. And Disney and ESPN will be fine with this world where for at least a little while, you know, still most people are getting ESPN from their cable bundle. And then another, you know, pick your number, 10 million or so are getting it from direct to consumer. But that is definitely what ESPN says publicly. And I kind of buy into it a little bit, mm-hmm. which is that we're launching this service just to give people as many ways as possible to subscribe to ESPN. But we don't necessarily want it to rock the boat on the current ecosystem, because in the end, we're perfectly fine with people paying their monthly cable subscription.
It is not the death of cable yet. It seems to be the general sentiment among many, but it's an ever-evolving world.
Right. We'll see. We'll see. But like, if you were to put a gun to my head and ask me, I would say, yeah, probably isn't. I think we'll see a plateau, not a true death spiral.
All of Alex Sherman's work can be found at CNBC, and do subscribe to the CNBC Sport newsletter, and you can get all up to date on what he has dubbed the confusion era potentially for wrestling fans. We will see as carrier negotiations go and continue. Alex, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with us about this. I know a lot of our viewers very intrigued to hear your thoughts on all of this. A major deal within professional wrestling this past week.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Bye.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the winter's bestseller pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
All right. That was Alex Sherman joining us. And Brandon, we were going to go over a couple of things, but just some of your takeaways from there. I mean, one of the big things to me coming out of this past week is the fact that TKO has a lot still at their disposal after this deal. Like for the wrestling side, they have the NXT PLEs. You have this library potentially out there. And on the greater front, like we know this UFC deal is going to close. It's just a question of where. And lingering over all of this is the Zuffa Boxing project and what interest there's going to be there. So, I mean,
said they're shopping five different properties simultaneously on Wednesday.
I mean, they are going to have, I mean, like coverage across the combat sports world where it feels more and more like they're going to have such a stranglehold in all three of these areas. If you want to include pro wrestling in the kind of combat sports pile.
I was thinking the other day about what major media companies do they not have deals with within TKO. And I guess what's left out is what Paramount and WWE.
Amazon.
And Amazon, yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, from your vantage point, like just on the WWE side, like I think we can all safely assume the NXT PLEs, they're going to land somewhere. The library becomes a more interesting question. Like, I just don't know if there's a streamer out there that has necessarily that interest in strictly the library. I mean, UFC has always maintained Fight Pass. I mean, you can still, if you want to subscribe to that, you can get every UFC card that's up there, and still, like, it's a 30-day window of their pay-per-views that go up there. But for WWE, it seemed like this YouTube strategy has been the more efficient one for
the
them
vault, yeah.
of late. But your most valuable content is this WWE library as opposed to WCW or other promotions.
Yeah, like we said before, I feel like there was this period where, or at least, you know, once you started, there's this period where everybody is excited to have access to the tens of thousands of hours of WWE's library. That started in 2014. We're now 11 years past that. You had 11 years to pay your $9.99 per month and watch all that stuff, watch all the world-class and Mid-South that you could handle. And people who are going to do that have probably done that at this point. They've had their rewatch project. So maybe the best place to monetize that stuff is just in some simple AVOD format like YouTube. Or, you know, I wouldn't rule out Peacock keeping the library or keeping NXT PLEs, and, you know, and maybe even there's some TNA and AAA as part of that.
And as we saw in that Netflix engagement report, like especially among like those Rumbles or old Manias, like there's definitely interest in those among, you know, a certain number of fans that, you know, if you're going to prioritize WWE's library, like those are you know, your big flagship events that maybe it's nice support if you are signing up for something.
Mm-hmm. Since we last talk about what Mark Shapiro said on the call, something that we both took notice of is talking about the simulcast piece of this deal, which is mentioned in the press release, that there's going to be select PLEs that are simulcast on the linear networks, which is business speak for the traditional ESPN networks, whether that's ESPN or ESPN2, who knows. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like pre-show and maybe the first couple matches, first hour or two, he said.
Less than we read into it when the deal was announced of like standalone, full pay-per-views.
We're not talking about the entirety of Money in the Bank being aired on ESPN, but a portion of the show, and then, oh, do you want to watch the rest of it? Get on the DTC app or whatever they're going to end up calling this.
Which in the fans' mind, does that almost like tier it into ESPN will become the pre-show, regardless of whether we're promoting this as the first two matches of the pay-per-view.
Well, and it sounds like, very much like UFC, right? You have the UFC prelims, and then you have the pay-per-view on the pay-per-view platform. But I guess like, that strategy only makes sense if there is a huge, because if you're watching that simulcast,
if they have 100% clearance among all these carriers, and you brought this up to me the other day, like if they have all these carriers cleared, yes, what is the incentive for you to sign up for this direct to consumer service or even split them among that point? All it is friction for your audience that has to go from ESPN to signing in to their app to have to watch the rest of a show, which again you are doing for UFC events. If you're like frequently you go from one place for the early prelims to the regular prelims to the main card, but you're right, like if there is like, what is this strategy if you have all of these carriers,
if it's nearly 100%, which is what we were talking about with Alex Sherman, it's just under 50%, and these deals will come up. I think there's a good chance that both the YouTube and the Comcast deal will come up for renewal, will need to be reworked before these events move to ESPN in March or April 2026. So it's very possible that for people watching the video that the two biggest pieces that are grayed out here end up getting access. But okay, if that's the case and you still got a quarter of the universe that doesn't have it, that does have to pay the extra $30, it's just a weird value proposition, right? Like maybe you get access to it, but if you're a Dish Network or a Sling subscriber, maybe you don't. Or maybe eventually when that deal gets reworked with EchoStar, bottom line, it's a great opportunity for everybody to learn about the pay TV ecosystem, learn what the acronym MVPD means. I don't see what's so complicated about this. This is a great teaching opportunity.
Yes, I think this is going to take up a lot of wrestling headlines in the months to come. We can also say I think we know the pattern, though, that if this DTC service is offered for you free at the beginning, much like Xfinity subscribers had Peacock, I don't think you should be expecting that to be the long term, that you will never have to pay for this service. Like, obviously, it's get as many people into subscribing, and then eventually we're going to roll out various, you know, prices that you will have to lock into. And over time, I mean, we will see what the value, like, I think overall, this is a great value for WWE just in terms of the ESPN promotional vehicle that this will provide, being on linear, what you have reported, the fact that they're going to take SportsCenter on the road to some of these big events.
Like, I'm sure they'll be promoted during NFL games, Monday Night Football, things like that.
Like that aspect of things, and we can follow up here on the earnings call, but of Mark Shapiro noting the fact that they are going to get, you know, that they actually took a lower paying deal for ESPN than another bidder that was out there, but they just saw the value of ESPN. And I don't doubt that that would be the better play here if we're talking, you know, a lesser paying deal, but there's the unintended value of this ESPN deal that I think fans will realize pretty quickly. Like after that WrestleMania promotion next year, I think you'll see what the full ESPN effect can generate.
I think there are reports today that NBCU Peacock had right of first refusal, but bid less than this deal. Somebody else, according to Mark Shapiro, bid more. Maybe that's Netflix. Seems pretty likely that would be Netflix. There's clearly still demand for this. That's strong enough for them to get a 60% increase on their prior deal. Now, do you notice they're saying 180 was the value of the deal?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about this because it's very rare that WWE ever puts the total out there. It's usually through all these other media outlets.
They put the Netflix deal right out there in the press release or in a filing, yeah, right when it happened.
That one they did.
Yeah, yeah.
So for this, when this deal was made in 2021, the figure that was routinely cited was $200 million, was the average annual value of this deal. On the call on Thursday, they made a specific note to state that that was not the average annual value. Instead, it was $900 million over 5 years. I believe he said the first year was actually under $100 million, and the AAV was $180 million, because the stock price actually went down on Wednesday when this deal was announced, because people were going off that comp of $200 million and not $180 million. And yeah, this led to, because everyone had thought $200 million before this update.
Yes, that's what was reported at the time, and it's not directly attributed to WWE, but they had plenty of time to correct that if they wanted to. I mean, I don't know if they're taking into consideration what Brandon Ross said in advance of the call and what they confirmed on the call, which is that there's an extra, was it $20 million? $50 million in expenses they were paying towards the documentaries that they, as part of the deal with Peacock, that they had to produce.
It was like 250 hours of programming they had to produce, plus five documentaries over the term of that five-year deal, all of which they don't have to produce now as part of this deal. And they're holding on to the NXT PLEs, and they're holding on to the library.
Yes, I'm looking to see what was reported at the time. And we have a $1 billion deal. Maybe they were rounding this
what's $100 million? Okay, that's a margin of error.
Yes.
What else was brought up in the call, that anything that jumped out at you? I mean, you mentioned in the interview, I mean, rarely have we heard Mark Shapiro just so steadfastly when asked if there's been a trouble in the UFC negotiations. I mean, Mark Shapiro was very, very adamant that they are unequivocally, no, we are not experiencing any issues.
I'm looking forward to a possible Mark Shapiro versus Brandon Ross matchup at WrestleMania next year.
Yeah. I mean, dude, if you want some strategy of going into these calls, like, Brandon Ross knows how to just fire off questions and then boom, 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 boom. And he got answers to them. I think it was like five he got out here. There was also a bit about the Zuffa Boxing Front, just going over again the financials, that they are going to get a $10 million set fee for these super fights, like the Canelo-Crawford fight on September 13th, and stressing that there is no risk. They just promote, they negotiate the rights, they will be putting Zuffa boxers on the undercards, and then they expect to net another $10 million for each of these super cards that they manage and promote. They're going to get a fee through On Location. We're working through all of this and basically stating this is like nearly pure profit for us, that this deal is going to generate, and that they are going to be, you know, promoting, negotiating the rights for these big cards.
Yeah. And I mean, if there's a real boxing, you know, cultural zeitgeist to capture, you know, in our lifetimes, you know, as adults anyway, boxing has not been a big deal since, you know, in my view, since Tyson, Lennox Lewis, maybe, and that's what, the very early 2000s. And it seems like there's a space for that if they can cultivate big boxing stars, and especially on the heavyweight side. Another thing that stood out to me is, so wasn't there a speculation and doubt about whether SmackDown was getting extra money for the third hour?
Yes.
Here they are. Saying under scrutiny of the SEC that this format expansion, that's what I want to hear whenever we talk about this again. Format expansion.
The format expansion era that we might, will it be a recurring expansion that we get?
Who knows? But they do say that they're getting more money because of the extra hour of SmackDown that they did for the first half of this year.
Final things here I just wanted to touch upon from the earnings. Number one was, it was the WrestleMania quarter, so maybe this is kind of like your peak season for WWE, but their increase when it comes to sponsorships was through the roof. It went from $24.3 million in last year's quarter, which again was a WrestleMania quarter, to $58.3 million this year, and it's still, you know, it is still not at the level of UFC, but they've greatly lessened the gap between the two. again, this being WrestleMania, they would probably represent maybe like the highest point they're going to reach this
year. Hopes to have more inventory.
I mean, they were just pumping their chest that every match at WrestleMania on both nights had its own individual sponsor.
And look, they did that last year too, I think, but they didn't have the degree of, you know, covering the canvas and putting Slim Jim on the tables that they did. You know, that wasn't happening. The table thing wasn't happening last year, and the canvas was probably not as covered as it is now.
And also, I assume, Brandon, you and I have the same practice when we open up the 10K of a control find VINCE, and
sometimes you have to do executive chairman.
That's true. That's true. Sometimes, you know, it used to be a large scale live event. It used to also be
large scale international events.
That's true. So we did get the latest when it comes to Vince McMahon's stock situation with Endeavor, where it states that on June 3rd of this year, Endeavor entered into a stock purchase agreement with Vincent K. McMahon, pursuant to which Endeavor agreed to purchase 1,579,080 shares of Class A common stock held by McMahon at a per share price of $158.32.
Which they disclosed at the time. You remember that?
They did disclose this. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got $250
million. I'm sure
everyone's
watching carefully and they already knew this, yes. But this was there were filings about this at the time. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's why Brandon is on top of all of it.
But there was another McMahon note in here is that he's, well, as always, he's still paying certain legal costs that really aren't coming out of TKO's finances, but they're coming out of Vince McMahon's personal finances. Includes certain costs related to certain litigation matters, including antitrust lawsuits for UFC and WWE, and matters where Mr. McMahon has agreed to make future payments to certain counterparties personally. Those would refer to NDAs.
And maybe as well any potential body shop repairs that might be necessary after his latest run-in with authorities.
I don't think those are on TKO's books, though.
No. Personal.
I don't think so. Hopefully.
What if it involves a WWE employee, allegedly?
I think that's that employee's personal business, probably.
Okay. All right. Well, everyone, this was a special bonus edition of Pollock and Thurston, and we might be experimenting with these more when we do have interviews as opposed to the Wednesday show that we do where, Brandon and I can just provide you all of our snark and analysis that you have come to enjoy on a weekly basis. But a big thank you to Alex Sherman for joining us. We will be back next Wednesday, as always, 1 p.m. Eastern time on the WrestleNomics and post-wrestling platforms. You can follow Brandon's work at WrestleNomics.substack.com and Patreon.com/WrestleNomics as well. Over at postwrestling.com. Brandon is always popping up on the post wrestling pages. So, you know, keep those on your favorite tabs, and we will be chatting with you next week on Pollock and Thurston.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.